are in workshop 32, the root server system, and the session will last for an hour and a half. I'm George Sadowski, I'm your moderator, and we hope that this will be a particularly informative and useful session for you. Second slide, please. Thank you. The purpose of this workshop is to give us all a better understanding of the root server system and how it works. It's an integral piece of the internet. It is a critical internet resource. It has worked more or less flawlessly ever since it was introduced. It's an important thing, and in order to understand how the internet works, it's important to understand how the root server system works. We have there was an earlier workshop this morning on DNSSEC, which is a more secure way of implementing DNS. And I'm really sorry that that particular workshop preceded ours, because in terms of consistency, it should have followed ours. There was a lot of discussion in that workshop about control and the politics, the governance aspects of the root server system. And those of you who were there heard that. As a result of that, it's our purpose here not to discuss any of the governance issues, but to understand. This is really more of a tutorial than anything else, and we hope that that there will be a lot of material presented which will be useful to you in your understanding of this piece of the internet. We have an all-star cast here. Could you go to slide four, please? Skip one. Okay. Where are we? So I can hear right here. Okay. And we've gone too far. Can we back? Sorry, I need some technical assistance here. We're back. Okay. The workshop panel consists of six people who have been involved intimately in various aspects of the root server system. We'll start out with Desiree Milosevic, who will talk about give a general overview of the system. She'll be followed by Lars Johan Lehmann, who will talk about the evolution of the system, and he's particularly well qualified to do so, because as the system has evolved, so has he. And he is one of the root server operators right now. He will be followed by Suzanne Wolf, who will be talking about the security aspects of the DNS. These are particularly important aspects. Even though the system is robust and has performed nearly flawlessly, it's important to understand where the threats to the system are and what the root server community is doing to make sure that the system continues to perform reliably and well. With that as background, there are three people here who are involved in setting up root servers, root server mirrors. Haikiko Rahman in Bangladesh, Michuki Mwangi in Kenya, and Oscar Robles from Mexico. And they'll describe the particular issues that they encountered in their regions, in their countries, and the successes that they've had. So I'm going to ask the panelists to introduce themselves, to give you a little bit more detail about themselves, and then launch into the presentations. Where are we? Desiree.
Thank you very much, George, for introduction. My name is Desiree Milosevic, and I'm International Affairs and Policy Advisor at Afilias, which is a top-level domain name operator. I would like to thank ISOC and GIPI for putting together this workshop, because it's always difficult to gauge the level of the audience in these workshops. So some of the things I'll be touching upon may be very familiar for you, and some of them may be new. What I'm going to talk about is give just a brief introduction in the prehistory of DNS, how it all worked without before we had a DNS system, and then touch upon some of the frequently asked questions, such as who are the root service operators, what do they do, what does a root server do itself, and how important it is in the overall system, who pays the bills, and so on. Then I'll share some Afilius's points of view as one of the TLD operators and private sector entities. To start with, before 1983, we had a system which was very centralized, a long host.txt file, which comprised of entries of all the host names of the internet, and it was updated manually. So you can imagine what kind of single point of failure it represented if it was if anybody were to attack or lose data of all the internet hosts that were stored in that .txt file. So luckily, in 1983, with the inventors of Paul Mokopatris and John Postel, we have started the implementation of the domain name system, which is a distributed and decentralized database with some centralized elements, which are not usually mentioned, and a lot of decentralized elements. It's certainly DNS, a domain name system, has parts of infrastructure, and it's a very complex system to describe in 7 minutes that I have to talk about, so I'll try to quickly go over it. It is one of the, as George have said, one of the most critical internet applications, because if the DNS is not available, internet users are not able to connect to internet service, websites, send emails, and so on. However, it has been a great success because it has been adapted to serve nearly 1 billion internet users. This slide has not worked, but it's maybe more interesting because you might be familiar with the scheme where you see a hierarchical system of DNS represented, and the top box would have been a root or a dot, and anybody querying a domain name site would not necessarily have to walk the tree, traverse the tree or the top, because of the distributed nature of the DNS. You can query the nearest name server that is being cached in your DNS of your ISP provider, so the not much traffic actually goes back. Skipped one slide, but I think if we were to go back into who are the root server operators, I think it's important to say that initially there were only 13 root servers that have been deployed, and these are the various organizations that are often referred as the root server operators. The letter M is the WIDE project, that's actually a little bit hanging off the slide. You can see the diversity of these organizations that are operating root servers. Today, we have a much better picture where we have 133 root instances and installation of root servers, and you can find more information about this on rootservers.org. This device is not, you can see much better here on this photo what a tremendous achievement has been done over the last few years. And although you can see these little clouds, it does not necessarily point how many of the copies of DNS root servers are installed at these different locations. There are sometimes multiple installations at these places. So this is the current map of the root server installations. Okay. So what you have seen on the previous slide before the map is that there's a cooperation of government, academic, non-for-profit, and commercial organizations that run the domain name service. It's a multi-stakeholder community. And this, the combination of its diverse and autonomous organization actually has multiple funding sources and has been highly successful and, in our opinion, should be continued to run so. The interesting frequently asked questions are or myths that each of the root server has a complete table of the addresses of all the TLD servers. It's really a small file containing all the names of ccTLDs and TLDs, and there can be many other copies of each server routers using the Anycast feature of the internet routing system. So these copies could be deployed anywhere on the internet. Each root server system is operated on a volunteer basis, and it's run by an independent entity. You might be familiar with policies in place where changes to the root zone entry file must be approved by the U.S. Department of Commerce, which is based at the National Telecommunications and Information Agency after approval of IANA. So what do? They present small but essential parts of the whole internet domain name system. They publish a small zone file with entries to all of the TLDs, and they actually enable the clients to traverse that tree by providing a very redundant and stable entry point into the domain name system. Now, just briefly before I pass it on to the following speakers who will go into much more detail of what happens, is to clarify some of the frequently asked questions and myths that surround root server operations. No internet traffic passes through the root name servers at all. They have nothing to do with routing, and I have heard many other people mentioning this week thinking that routing may have to do something with routers. Therefore, know the difference in spelling. Name servers just answer queries from other parts of the DNS. The root name servers do not store all the information in the DNS. Storing all the information will go against in one place would be totally infeasible today. Would take us back to the old system of host.txt file. This is exactly why the DNS server was developed as a distributed database. And one main point, if you were to register any domain name system today, no root zone file would not be changed. It would be the relevant zone file where that domain name belongs to that will be updated. A few more, I think, myths. Here we go. The internet name servers are not queried every time that you browse the web and send email. I think that some survey has been done, and there are other more misconceptions and understandings of how the root system works. So a well-behaved DNS server needs to query the root name server only once every 45 hours of each particular TLD because of the distributed nature. Hopefully. Lastly, I'd like to point out that the domain name system has performed well through a period of very rapid growth that we all witnessed, and that root server operations provide a safe and stable and redundant environment for the TLD operators. Some entities view control of the DNS as a step towards gaining various controls, such as they have a view that internet gaining control of the DNS would help them use that for broader purposes, such as stopping phishing and protecting intellectual property rights and so on, or regulating e-commerce. So the administration of the domain name system at the highest level should be left to a non-governmental body and not to be turned over to intergovernmental organization. You might be familiar with this conclusion that comes from the survey that has been carried out in 2005 in called the Cyber Science Cyber Post in Cyberspace. There is a link at the end to that survey. So the combination of diverse autonomous root server organization and multiple funding sources, we find that this is very important and that success should be continued. The some of the policy suggestions, we would certainly encourage continued deployment of root server copies, and also consideration of the need for further diversification of the organization that operates root servers. Steps should be taken to improve the security of the DNS, and that is something that the Internet Engineering Task Force has been very vocal about, and would support wide deployment of the DNS security extension protocols that would overall enhance the state of the DNS. So here are the links to the survey that I mentioned. There was also an excellent presentation at the RIPE meeting that has presented all the findings in that survey. And finally, I think that is one of my last slides. Okay, this was the original background to the invitation of an event that will take place in London, which you could webcast, that will cover 25 years of DNS, and you can ask me for more information. I'll pass it now to the next speaker. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Desiree. The takeaway that's most striking here for me is that over the last 20 years, this is a system that was built to handle a few thousand users, and it, with the aid of the internet technical community, it has scaled to handle a billion users without any significant hiccups along the way. Lars Johan Lehmann is going to tell us how it happened.
Everyone, I'm Lars Johan Lehmann. Oops, that was without background. Never mind. I'm Lars Johan Lehmann. I work as operations manager for i.rootservice.net, one of the 13 rootname servers, the one that is based in Stockholm, Sweden, and it's operated by a small company called Autonomica. Next slide, please. Oh, we have it. Yes, and. As all rootname server operators, at least should do, I have to issue a disclaimer. The root server operators is not a united group. It's a set of 12 different organizations, and I cannot speak for the other organizations. I can only speak for Autonomica and iRoot. So let's look a bit at the history here. I started to work with the iRoot server, which wasn't called iRoot.rootservice.net at the time. It was more known as nick.nordju.net. And it was located at the Technical University in Stockholm. And I was a fairly fresh systems administrator. At that time, it was what the myth usually says. It was a small workstation sitting on a desk in an office. That's actually true, but that was 15 years ago. So a lot has happened underway here, and the old system where it was manually updated, it was a single machine, all that is long gone. We've seen changes during the 1990s where we first started to realize that the query load, the number of queries per second coming to this machine was climbing and climbing as the commercial internet started to grow and gave us private customers. In the beginning, it was only academic and military research. And as this all grew, we started to see more and more queries coming to the machine, and we started to realize the importance of this machine, that we couldn't rely just turn it off for half an hour to do service on it. So we had to plan more carefully. We had to buy better hardware. We had to store, place it in a better place in a machine room. We had to attend to it more, and it continued to to grow. And as this service grew, it started to consume more money. So we started to see the beginning of a financial issue of running a rootname server. So in the mid-1990s, there was a need to expand the root server system as a whole. Until then, there were only nine root name servers. And John Postel, who was the Pope for the name server system, he realized that we really need to expand this. So we needed to fit more name servers into the list of name servers for root. There's a technical limitation that says that we can only fit this into a packet that is 512 bytes in size, 512 characters. And in order to fit more servers in, the names of the servers were changed from the old nic.noji.net to letter.rootservers.org, because we could then take advantage of a compression algorithm that actually fits this better into the packets. So there was room for four more. And they were created, and they were co-located with existing root name servers, and then dispersed rather quickly, one to London, which is today Kroot, operated by the RIPNCC in Amsterdam, and Mroot, which is operated by the WIDE project in Tokyo. Two of them remained, and then, if I remember correctly, the entire process stalled. After that, Lroot has been moved to ICANN, but that didn't move it out of the United States, unfortunately. And Jroot, the last one that was created in this process, still remains with VeriSign. So that's a legacy of this stalling process. And I seem to remember, and maybe you could correct me, that the reason for the process stalling was actually that John died. In the fact that John died put the root server operators in a tight spot, because until then we had a very obvious connection to the source of the data, and we all had a direct connection with John Postel, but we didn't really know much about each other as root server operators. But when John died, there was a crucial need to continue the operation of the root service, because we couldn't have the internet disappear just because one man dies. It's not feasible. So we all got together in a first face-to-face meeting where all the root server operators participated in 1998. And we all agreed that this service must continue, and we must continue to use the IANA-based information as the source for our service. So that's the thing with the root server operators. Unanimously agree. There's no discussion about that. We continue to see a problem of growing number of queries per second. We continue to see the problem of under-provisioned regions on the internet, and that led to a few of the root server operators taking the decision to start to use Anycast. And now let's see if I can go to the next slide here. Well, this one doesn't seem to work. So the root server system as a whole faces a number of issues. We've tried to expand the system under given restraints. We have restraints on the data we take in. We have restraints on that we can't change the system drastically and quickly, but we have to evolve with the internet as it grows and changes. Eventually, the idea of Anycast came up, which is using the same IP address in multiple places on the internet. The list of root name servers is only 13 IP addresses, but a number of those 13 can be found in many places on the internet. So if one of them disappears, there will be another same IP address somewhere else that will take over the role of the one that disappeared. So that's why we can say that we have many copies around the world, but only 13 listed in the name server set. We are seeing new protocol requirements. The DNS protocol as such is evolving. We're seeing the requests for IPv6 access to the root zone, the root database. So we are underway to provide these servers over IPv6, and that also means that we have to add IPv6 data to the database. DNSSEC has been talked about already in a previous session. That's a very important thing because that changes the behavior of the DNS server. You cannot serve DNSSEC from old software because the software needs to know about these new records and know how to handle, how to respond to such queries. But that said, DNSSEC records will only be sent in an answer to a query that actually requested them. To get the DNSSEC records, you must actually turn on a special flag bit that says, I want DNSSEC records, please. And only then will you be faced with them, which means that most clients today who are not aware of DNSSEC never see this. So even if it's introduced to the root or any zone for that matter, the clients don't see it unless they specifically ask for it. We have other operational challenges. With this Anycast system, you have suddenly 30 installations, in our case, across the entire globe that we need to manage, monitor, keep track of, and so on. And we have various types of attacks. I think that Suzanne will talk a bit more about that. Next slide, please. Oh, but it doesn't work. As Desiree said, we're up to 133 sites now. I made it like that because the 133rd site was actually put into operation the day before yesterday, I think, as we started our site in Doha, Qatar. We have cryptographically signed data transfers to make sure that nothing is changed between VeriSign, who hosts the master file on behalf of IANA and the Department of Commerce, and us as root servers. And we also have to distribute that to all our 30 sites across the globe, all crypto signed. The root server operators maintain a very tight engineering cooperation. We meet 3 times per year. We have teleconferences if we need. We exchange lots of email. We have email lists with encryption if needed, and there's lots of communication between the root server operators nowadays. And we also have a relationship with ICANN through the Root Server System Advisory Committee, where all the root server operators are participants. I don't think this thing works. Okay. When it comes to monitoring, that's a thing that becomes very relevant when you have servers spread across the entire globe. Does my server in Perth work? Does my server in San Francisco work? Does my server in Johannesburg work? So there are several ways to do this. There's normal inside monitoring where we actually talk to the machine ourselves, but we are also interested in seeing how does the world perceive our service? How does the world see this service that we're trying to provide? And to do that, there have been a few probe networks installed. A probe is a machine that sends queries to our servers and then reports back to a statistics center what the result of that query was. And the RIPNCC came up with the idea, and they already had boxes spread, so they ride on that. And then the WIDE project in Tokyo did the same, and we at Autonomica now try to deploy our own set of these probe machines. You can see one of them is sitting behind the small projector on the table there, the white box. That's actually one of those probes. It's active from this room here now. I'll take it down later, but that's what we try to ship out to various parts of the world. So we hope to have 50 of these boxes deployed by the end of the year. And we also cooperate with a couple of organizations for research and data analysis. I think we're almost done. Next slide, please. I think that's going to be covered by Suzanne. We do see attacks. They don't break the internet for several reasons, but I'll leave that to Suzanne. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. And it's quite appropriate that this is we segue into the security issues involved, because the root server system has to function. It has to function well, and it has to continue to provide stability and security for its for users. So Suzanne Wolf is going to talk about that.
Thanks, George. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be able to be here and talk a little bit about how the world looks to us as operators. I had a very brief set of slides. I find that my colleagues have covered a number of things that play into the security issue. Okay. We appear to be having a slight technical difficulty.
I think we need some technical help from the back of the room, please, because we're not able to change the slides.
Okay, I can do that. Yes, it is. Forward. Next, please. There we are. And I will note that in spite of the technical glitches here, the DNS route has continued to function. Yes, as I said, my colleagues have already provided a good beginning on some of these topics, so I will only take sort of a very brief skim over the issues from a very high level. I believe any of us would be happy to talk further about specific issues if people want to find us in the halls or at the breaks. But at the very highest kind of level, if you could, next, please. I do have to provide an introduction, since I'm speaking from one viewpoint only. My employer, ISC, is a private, not-for-profit U.S. company. Among other activities, we write and maintain DNS software, and we operate the name server referred to as f.rootservers.net from about 36 Anycast sites. I personally have been involved in DNS infrastructure and root operations since the late 1990s. With multiple root servers. I presently serve as the liaison from the ICANN Root Server Advisory Committee to the ICANN Board of Directors. Next, please. Not to go back over the sort of basic overview, but the takeaway and the important thing as far as security relevant operations for us is a great diversity of control over the system, much redundancy, and we believe that provides a great deal of resilience, but it also means that we need to work closely together to manage the system. We do also point out that we are the publisher of the root zone data. We are not the source. We take no position on DNS set keys, IDN strings. It's our job to provide the highest quality access to the root zone data. Next, please. In that context, we think of ourselves as part of a much larger ecosystem. We are not a special creation separate from the internet. We're part of the internet. We face the same risks, and the same threats, and the same opportunities that the industry, the governments, that other participants in the internet face. We have contributed to good practices with government and private organizations. We follow recognize good practice. As you've already heard, we have evolved and matured with the internet we serve. So where now? Next. We come from a history of engaging challenges as we've grown. we have mastered early challenges regarding host and network security. There was a day that probably most people in this room maybe don't remember when the concerns of the day had to do with hijacking and malicious activity against specific servers and specific operations, or with networks being overwhelmed because we had inadequate connectivity. This is not the case anymore. The issue of operational integrity, there was a time when, as my colleague described, when many of the servers depended on individuals to keep operating. Now, the servers are all operated by professionals, typically by network operations centers. There's always someone in charge of making sure each of these machines and its connectivity is working. Perhaps most importantly, as far as the evolution and defense of the system, we've learned how to balance conservatism, the need to make sure it always, always, always works, with the need to evolve it further into the future. Next. As an example of the kind of operational environment we live in, the principal operational threat today is something called distributed denial of service attack, which probably most of you have heard of. What is it? An overwhelming flood of traffic intended to cripple a server or a service. It may target DNS, it may use DNS servers as part of the attack. It's a threat to all internet infrastructure. It's a style of attack, and it is a threat to all internet infrastructure, not just the root. How do we respond? How do we manage this? Principally, we have technical measures in place. Over-provisioning is the term in the trade. It means we have dramatically more bandwidth than is needed and dramatically more system resources than are needed under normal circumstances to keep the internet traffic that we do see moving along. We have dramatically more capability than is normally needed. We also contribute to tracking and analysis with researchers, private and government partners, to monitor attacks as they occur, to take countermeasures, and to study them so that they don't happen again. It's important, in fact, to note that even DDoS is largely a potential threat. The attacks that have occurred so far that have made the news because our and other people's monitoring systems have found them, not because they had an impact on the ability of users in the world to continue to use the DNS. But because we don't know, we never know what's coming next, we're always increasing capabilities, we're always studying, and always responding. The operational measures we take have included close cooperation among operators, our respective governments, industry. We're still learning how to do that as the internet around us is learning how to do it. Next, please. So to continue to respond to the threat, we just need to keep increasing resources available, cooperating more closely together, and making sure that even in the situation where we are not under attack, but others are, we can aid in the analysis and response by working with researchers, other interested parties, law enforcement. Next. Just a word, since DNSSEC, I had already been covered in another workshop. All it does is provide signatures to authenticate data operationally. There's adjustments to be made, which we're ready to make when the community is ready for us to serve this capability. We'll work to do that. Next. There are a number of other issues that always come up when people are talking about internet security or stability. Many of them do not involve the DNS root directly. Phishing and farming, fraud, spam, issues around content don't involve the root directly. But we are part of the ecosystem. We are part of the present and future of the internet. We continue to evolve ways to work together with the community to mitigate threats and evolve the system to the next billion users and the next. Next slide, please. And that was all I had.
Thank you very much, Susan. Well, the explosion of root server capability from the 13 to now 133 and counting has allowed many, many countries to implement their own root servers, and there are a whole bunch of advantages in doing so. We have three cases here. The first will be is the new root server in Bangladesh, and Haikakur Rahman will explain how it was put in and what the issues were in its implementation. Do you want to speak from there?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'm Haikakur Rahman from Bangladesh. I don't have any slides, but I will just briefly talk about some issues regarding establishment of root server, mirror root server in Dhaka. In fact, it's a quite successful case of multi-stakeholders partnership. The time we are opportunate enough. The time was such like that we just established our first internet exchange in Bangladesh. Due to the establishment of IX, already the internet communities were getting benefited, and they were very positive. When we were being approached by the authorities outside, Internet Systems Consortium and EPINIC, they contributed to host establish the root server in Dhaka. So the government were very positive about it, and till December 2006, we were a UNDP-funded project. So everything was very positive for us. So it was a very enthusiastic step in establishment establishing the root server in Dhaka. We had, still we have several problems like the whatever other third world countries share. We have electricity problem, we have technical know-how, lack of technical know-how, but we are surviving because we have developed a backup electric supply. Government is helping us, backup UPS or specially designed rack, etc., etc. And our management structure is such like that. SDNP has been closed, but it has been transformed into a foundation. So foundation has taken over the operation of all the internet exchange and the root server operation. So nothing is stopped. Everything is continuing as it was before. And the advantages what we are getting now is that. We don't have a high-speed internet backbone also. Very recently, we have been connected to CMU V4. And government thought that with any interruption, since we have only one fiber backbone, to become internet more stable, that's why we emphasis on the establishment of the root server inside the country. And everybody is happy. Due to installation of IX, already each ISP, all the leading ISPs are connected now. Each of them are talking very fast, and end users are having their names resolved very fast. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. I'm very grateful to share my things with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll hear from Machuki Mwangi, who's going to talk about the experience of installing a mirror server in Kenya. Next slide, please.
Thank you, George. Good afternoon. Now, I'm going to try and give a presentation on terms of how our impact, or rather the impact we experienced when we implemented the root servers that we have in Nairobi, but also just give you a general overview of what is happening in Africa. Next slide, please. Now, this map, for some of you, you may have seen this map, and if you actually look at it, what you'll see is that you have the green and the cables that are actually running towards the west coast of Africa. And then on the east coast, where Kenya is, I don't have a pointer, but you'll see that there's actually no cable that serves that region. And if you notice that every other country which seems to have fiber also seems to, thank you. So that's Kenya and the East African coast. There is actually no cable up to Mozambique. Now, if you actually look at most of the countries with cables, Gabon, Nigeria, Ghana, you also see that they actually have a mark which shows that they're actually doing satellite. Now, those two issues are quite interrelated, and I'll be discussing them in the next slide. So if you could just move to the next slide, please. So the scene means that for most of the countries in Africa, actually, what we are facing is a lot of high latencies. By high latencies means that anyone on satellite connectivity will experience at least 500 milliseconds to the next hop. That is physics. There's really nothing we can do about that, and we'll have to live with that. Then wherever there is fiber, you'll notice that actually they have a satellite link, and the reason being is that the cost of fiber is so high that it's actually relatively competitive to actually have a satellite link. So still, with the fiber connectivity, which is bound to be, you know, helpful to improve the latencies, the pricing is not competitive for doing business, so you opt to go for satellite. And also, as a result, most of the ISPs who are on fiber, what happens is that the satellite that they use for backup, for some will use the satellite connectivity for backup, what happens in most cases is that they will buy smaller capacity because the costs are high. So whenever there's a link outage, the fiber cuts on the submarine fiber cables means that very little traffic can actually go out through the satellite connections. And for sometimes the connection, the fiber outage could last maybe 2 or 3 days. So that means during that period, very little traffic is actually going out. And whatever is prioritized means the more paying customer actually is the one who has access to better internet, and the less paying customer usually gets nothing. Another thing is that in some countries, there are regulatory issues, and with regulatory issues means that there's either an existing monopoly or there's only one provider. And in such cases, you basically have what we call a single point of failure. Whenever there's a problem, there's a failure of sorts with that telco, then it means everybody else experiences an outage. Now, next slide, please. So, in essence, what happens is that in some of these countries, you actually do have an exchange point, and in other countries, you actually don't have an exchange point. So before you have a root server in your country, what happens is that if you look, if you're a user, and this is just an example where there is actually an exchange point, is that your traffic for names resolutions, especially where you have to go to the root, actually have to leave your country, go out to the internet, and to the closest root server. Next slide, please. However, after you have implemented a root server in your country, then what happens is that the traffic is actually redirected, goes through the exchange point, and actually you do local resolutions. So one, at this point, most of us have to experience satellite links. At the local point, we're actually doing fiber connectivity wireless. So everyone is roughly around between 100 to 200 milliseconds within the country. So that means there's improved connectivity to, or when it comes to local resolutions. Next, please. So what is the impact? The most significant impact we notice out of this is there's autonomy on local resolution. What do I mean by this? In essence, every time in a country where you have either one provider, if they're down, despite the fact that you have an exchange point, that means you can do resolutions. So in one of our experiences, what used to happen is that when you try to send mail, after the outage has been on for, let's say, 2, 3, 4 hours, you try to say send mail, you know, click your outgoing mail to, you know, using Outlook or any of the mail clients, and the mail actually just stalls there. Nothing seems to be working. The reason being that the resolution process has actually stalled at a certain point, and so mails are actually not going out. And for even local content, where you have an exchange point, it means that you will not actually be able to send traffic across the exchange despite the fact that you have local connectivity, just because the resolution process is actually broken. again, the end users, what do they get to experience? If the resolutions are actually not being done local, it means that there's a certain level of waiting time that they have to experience at certain times to actually be able to resolve to some sites. And also, when it comes to the issues of, we've talked about attacks on the DNS. Now, that means you actually have improved resilience. Any attack that may be directed, let's say the closest root server that was next to you was fruit, and the F that is closest to you was directed, an attack was directed to that root server. That means people within that specific region may experience some certain level of outage when being served by that root server and have to go to another root server, which is actually slightly farther from them. Now, in such a case, if you actually had your local root server within your country, then you may actually be able to avoid such kind of, be subject to such kind of an incident. Lastly, as a result of actually having a local and stable infrastructure, that means you have an exchange point, you have root servers which are actually hosted there, then it actually develops confidence among the people, the operators and the end users in your country. And by that meaning that they're actually more confident in actually building hosting content in your country. So at the moment, most people in Africa will actually opt to ship and host their websites in US, UK, and Canada. But in our case, now we've started seeing the reverse of that, where actually people are finding the local infrastructure stable and actually opting to host locally for content that is geared towards local people. Next slide, please. Okay, so I had some statistics here, and this is from fruit. This is just to show you that there's actually traffic going on to the fruit servers, and we are able to monitor this. And you can see about 40K of traffic is actually being sent there. Now, this means, in essence, this 40K of traffic would be going through the transit links of all the ISPs put together. And while it may seem minuscule, it's actually a cost on international transit that they're actually being saving at this point in time. If you look at the one in South Africa, again, you'll see the same thing. It's about 100K. And when you look for those in Africa, 40K and 100K is somewhere in between almost close to $1,000. Maybe it's about $2,500 for 1 meg of traffic. So when you're saving 40K, you're actually making a significant cost saving when it comes to costs. Next slide, please. Now, this is just to show you what's happening in Nairobi. Previously, if you look at this graph, I hope it's a bit clear to those at the back, you'll see that the highest point we have on JRoot is 40 milliseconds. The highest point we have on FRoot is 200 milliseconds. Now, if I was plotting this against a satellite link, the highest point will probably be 1.2 seconds. So I am able to actually see that I have continuous connectivity to an fruit with below 50 milliseconds for the better part of 3 hours. And the same applies under 20 milliseconds for the better part of 3 hours on JRoot. Next slide, please. So some of the things which I'd want to highlight here is that may not be entirely useful to have a root server where you don't have an exchange point in a country. Unless, of course, in the case of a monopoly where you have only one outgoing point and you can put that in the incumbent telco's location and that serves everyone. Secondly, it is not particularly useful to have root servers where your CCTLD is not localized. Then it's not entirely useful to most of the people in the country because maybe they are registering their domain names within the TLD, the CCTLD, and so they may benefit from the root server resolutions, but again, they have to go out for the CCTLD resolutions. Next slide, please. However, it will be useful to have an additional root server in one particular country so that you have redundancy. And as we know how DNS works is that there's round robin, so once you have the first resolution on one server, occasionally it will also change to the next server. So if you have like two, then it will actually be useful that you'll be concentrating a majority of your resolution requests within the country. Also, it will be important or rather useful to have other TLD servers in your country. So for instance, if I am in Africa, it will be useful for us to see how we can create instances of other CCTLDs within the region in our country, because we do regional trade, regional communications. And also for the top level domain names, .com, .net, and .org, because again, majority of the communications we do are with people who are with the TLD names. So it will be particularly useful to actually have those TLD root servers on Anycast. And I think VeriSign, who are the operators of CommaNet, actually pushing out the instances of CommaNet to specific countries. Next slide, please. So is there an opportunity? And I'll say yes. Coming from the African region, this is just a map to show countries where we have exchange points. That means potentially, the first slide that was shown by Desiree here showed that there's a root server in Egypt. There are two of them in Nairobi and two of them in Johannesburg. That means of the 15 exchange points mapped here, only three have root servers. So that means there's potential for actually the root server operators coming together with the exchange point operators in these particular countries and putting up instances of root servers. And I believe that's an opportunity which we can all embrace and help improve the connectivity that exists, the user experiences that may be experienced in these particular countries. So with that, I'd like to conclude there and say thank you.
Finally, we hear from Oscar Robles about his experiences in Mexico.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Thank you, George. I am Oscar Robles. I'm General Director for NIC Mexico, the registry for .mx CCTLD. And also, we are in charge of the IP space, IP address allocation in for Mexican ISPs, internet service providers. I will talk out a little bit about the challenges and opportunities that we have faced with the installation of a node of the root server F in Mexico. I will repeat most of the benefits that you already seen from Michuki's presentation, because most of them apply to our situation. I will mention some other issues that I would like you to know. So please, next slide. First, NIC Mexico start with its own implementation of Anycast, this high availability technology for the DNS servers. We started back in 2003, and it was an in-house development because you may know that there is already commercial services that offer this option for CCTLDs and in general for TLDs. We developed internally, and as I was mentioning, it has the feature to provide high availability for the DNS service. We look, of course, we follow the standard, the technical standards defined by the technical community, not ICANN, by the way, but the IETF. But also, we were looking for diversity in the from the technological point of view, diversity in operative system, hardware, DNS implementations, firewalls, BGP implementation, and data centers or carriers communication. Next one, please. So, with this in mind, 1 year after this experience in Anycast, we start the communication with the ISC, Internet now is system or software? Well, it used to be software, now it's systems, I don't remember. But we started this communication with ISC. And in March 2004, we had this copy of the root server F already in place. But before that, we saw in Mexican ISPs similar myths that you already hear from the CIRE, for example, and they hardly had communication among them, because Mexico has this particularity that there's the dominant carrier, and as you can imagine, there are not many projects among the dominant carrier and the rest of the carrier providers. finally, we sat them in the same table, and we came into an agreement to put this copy of the root server F in Mexico with the joint cooperation of the main, the incumbent, and the other two carriers, which together has more than 95% of the traffic in Mexico. There is no IXP in Mexico. There is no there is no NAP in Mexico. But starting with this project, they started the peering agreements among them. So that's basically another way to have these benefits out of these projects. Not only what it gives us as a root server F copy, but also the side effects as of the project. Next one, please. So after the root server implementation, as I was telling you, there was a better understanding of the root server function, and mostly from the ISPs involved on this project. But also there were these peering agreements among them, which was very beneficial for them. And at the end of the day, for the end users that are customers of those ISPs. Also, they are interested in additional copies of or additional nodes of root servers, and they are looking for schemes as similar as to the root server F as possible, because there are these issues of importing equipment to Mexico. So the scheme of root server F was very appropriate for the situation in Mexico from the customs point of view. And at this moment, there is no more pressure about having local copies. I didn't mention this in the previous slide, but they were pushing pushing for having local copies out of the root server structure, which, by the way, was not an option to follow. But anyway, they were proposing this non-or unofficial local copies of the root zone, which, by the way, is very easy, because the root zone file is a very small zone file, so and hardly changes the information. But anyway, this is not the option, because we will be broken the DNS if we accept to do this. Next one, please. Finally, I was telling you that these kind of projects help us not only to have these benefits directly involved with the installation of a root server, of a copy of a root server in a country or in a region, but also the side effects of having sitting together the relevant players of the connectivity in that region. And for example, in Latin America, we are working together with some relevant players, in order to deploy further the footprint of the root server F. This is a joint project in between LACNIC, the regional IP address registry for Latin America, and ISC, the manager for the root server F. And that project started in April 2004. It's been now 3 years of implementation of this project, and we've implemented six copies of this root server F. One in Chile, one in Argentina, other in Venezuela, Ecuador, and Panama. Most of these projects are in close relationship with the CCTLD, except for the Argentina case, where we worked with the CABASE. This is the chamber of ISPs in Argentina. And actually, they are working also with VeriSign in order to have another copy of the root servers. Brazil is another country that has installed root servers in Latin America. So summarizing, we have 5, 6, 7 copies of the root servers in Latin America. And of course, there is the interest of LACNIC and also some of these entities to keep working with other entities or other managers of root servers in order to deploy further the footprint of the root zone. As was mentioning by Mishuki, it's not enough to have just one copy. It would be better to have the 13 copies in the region or in the country or near the IXPs or NAPs in a particular region. So that's my presentation.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground, both technically and in terms of geography, and I'm sure that there are comments and questions. I'm going to take the questions a few at a time and give the panel a chance to reflect and give you good answers. I don't think we have a portable mic. Do we have a portable microphone here? I don't think we do. So I'm going to ask you to queue up here, and we'll take questions in order. I'm afraid you'll have to come up. I don't know quite how far this goes.
I'm Yaovi from Benin. I thank the presenter for the information. My question is that, from what you said, is it a recommendation for the developing most of the countries to improve their infrastructure and to try to have a copy of the Route 7 in the country? Is the recommendation? It is something which we should push countries to move to? Thank you.
William Stackey. I think it might be worth explaining to the audience why it is that even if when you a country is disconnected from the rest of the world, it's still worthwhile having a Route server.
Okay. One more, and we have a microphone now and a willing volunteer. Okay, let's take those two questions. Who would like to respond?
Yes, I can have a go then. To the first question, whether it's a recommendation, I think it's a good idea. I would like to be able to provide that right here and now, but it boils down a bit to, at least in our case, our financial issue. We don't have the financial fundament to roll out in all places that we would like to, but we have started to cooperate with the people to find solutions for this, for financing more copies. So it's actually boils down to money in our case a lot. Other root server operators may have a different view on that, but I think those who do Anycast find that going out to many places costs a lot of money, and if we can share that money somehow, that's probably a way forward.
Thank you. Just speaking for the F route operation, kind of to elaborate on what my colleagues have said about deploying Anycast in their areas of the world, what we look for, we have a variety of financial models and operational models, but what we look for is a strong local community, and I believe what the I operator also looks for, a strong demand locally, some cooperation among the players. There isn't a need for operating capital so much as for the resources to be in place somehow. We have accepted donations of equipment, we've accepted donations of bandwidth, of colo carrier services. The important thing is to put together a cooperative model for making it work and making sure that everything will be well taken care of into the future, and that the benefit will really be there.
Anybody else want to comment? Machuki?
Okay, I think I'll go to the second question. the second question, okay, well, let me start by the first and say, I think it's really important to actually have a root server in any country. I think it should be the way forward to go in terms of the developing countries. And the reason being that as you're growing your infrastructure, it's equally important to actually have a stable infrastructure that your users can associate with. You know, when something is stable and people can own up to it, then it's easier to actually approach them and ask them to develop local content. When they don't think it's stable, they will shy away from developing local content, and those who do will actually host it outside, which is not entirely useful to any particular country. So I think it's actually a way to look at it in terms of having it enhances and builds your local infrastructure to make it very stable, and your users have a better internet experience, so you get more users on board, you have more content developed, and hence it basically goes to, and the policy politics side of it, you know, helps grow the economy, the financial position of most of these regions. Now, going to the other question, where the question was whether it's why it's necessary to have a root server in a country, especially if it's disconnected off the internet. The way the DNS works is that every time a query is done, for the very first time, the query has to go to the root before it goes down to the TLD servers. Now, if a country has been disconnected off the internet, it means that after a certain period of time, the queries, the time to leave entries that are put for every DNS entry will actually expire, and so the process has to be initiated afresh. Now, I choose not to go into politics, but look at the case in mind of, I think, Myanmar, when the disconnection happened recently. Now, I don't know whether there's a root server in Myanmar, but if there was a root server in Myanmar, local communications within the country would have continued, despite the fact that actually the switch outside the from the country to the rest of the world was off for as long as it took. The communications within the country would have continued. But if they didn't have a root server, then it means actually any communications that they had, especially if the TLD servers are actually within the country, and the DNS servers for some of the hosts are within the country, then that stops working completely. I hope that answers your question. Yes.
Thanks very much. We have three more questions here. The first one is from me, from Machuki, so you can work on it. I'm intrigued with the fact that there's a trade-off here. Well, not a trade-off, there's a complementarity between saving money on fiber costs and getting better service at the same time. The question is, how many months does it take to recover your investment in the root server equipment, assuming that you can save at the rate you've been saving on connectivity costs to the international internet?
Paul Wilson from APNIC. I'm actually taking the liberty with the facilitator's permission to make a few comments rather than asking questions. The panel can relax for a minute. As our friend from Bangladesh mentioned, APNIC has been involved with deployment of Anycast root servers throughout the Asia Pacific region for quite some time now, since 2002. And we've deployed and supported the deployment of more than 20, 21, I think, at the moment. And in that same period of time since then, there's been at least another 15 or so. So we've gone from a position of having one root server, the MROOT, in the Asia Pacific region at that time to having at least 35 around the region. And it's been a very successful project. We know that the servers that are deployed in Beijing and in Seoul in South Korea are, I think, the busiest servers outside the US and sustaining extremely high loads, which represents, of course, a huge performance improvement for a huge number of queries in those particular countries. We've worked very successfully for the sake of diversity of the technical infrastructure with Autonomica, with iRoot, with ISC, FRoot in the US, with KRoot, our friends at Ripe NCC, and also with M. And so with four different root servers that we've been operating, server operators that we've been working with in different parts of the world, I think we can show that the diversity of that system is actually being fully represented and successfully represented in the Asia Pacific. On the question of costs, it's often thought, and particularly when we start talking to people about what it costs to have a root server, they assume it's a kind of a multi-million dollar thing because, frankly, the value of performance increases that you see would have to be well above that sort of level. But I think of the servers that we have financially supported, the costs in hardware terms have been only from between about $20,000 to at most about $80,000, and that's to support the highest end root server that we've been involved with deploying. So relative to the benefits that are seen, it's a really very cost effective activity. Just one final comment is really on the issue of who the root server operators are, and at APNIC, I've dealt over the last several years with many, many inquiries about these, about root servers from prospective hosts of root servers around the region. And really, I've found that in rare cases does the question of control of the root by the root server operator actually enter into discussions at all. What people are interested in is to receive the infrastructure, to receive the benefits of the of that infrastructure, and as I say, the question of whether it's a Swedish organization operating it, an American one, or a Dutch one, is of quite minor concern pragmatically. Now, that's from my experience talking to the actual operators who are hosting these servers and benefiting from them. So I think that's a useful perspective when we start to look at all the other political questions, which start to get extremely complicated in this area. I hope that's a helpful set of comments. Thanks.
Quite a helpful set of comments, but I still have a question. It may be a dumb question, and it is actually a hypothetical question, because I personally don't think it will happen, but I think in the minds of some of the people who look at sort of the control issue of who rules the root and who authorizes it, maybe in the minds of some of those people is the question, what if the US government, the evil, starts taking off, let's say, one country, let's not name it, let's call it country X, out of the root, forces VeriSign, take it out. And the question there is, what would the actual effect be? I think on the one hand, if I understand it right, you have an automated process that all the root servers make a copy, sooner or later, after the expiration period. What if we have this Anycar system, some of the operators say, well, we don't agree with this change, we'll revert it to the backup. What does happen then to the net? Do we have different routes now to the whatever it is? Is it breaking? So let's play through just this hypothetical thing to see whether this would actually affect operations or not.
Okay, it is a hypothetical question, so all we're going to give you are hypothetical answers. So who would like to respond?
Okay, I'll go first with the issue, the question the moderator asks, whether we've been able to recover the money. And I think looking at it from a monetary point of view is that the money to be saved is actually it's minuscule. You would recover that over a certain period of time, but we've naturally not gone down to calculate how long it would, probably in a year's time. But the whole issue would be that, for starters, most of the operators, root server operators, help you with the implementation process. That means you don't have to buy the kit. You probably just have to actually source for a hosting and provide transit. Those are the two key issues. So that means it's the power, the facility, and the transit. And if you actually look at that, if you're an operator, that's an overhead that actually can be catered for part of corporate social responsibility. It can be factored in many ways to be a part of the operational expenditure that the organization has. So I wouldn't want to look at it that there's an expense to be recovered, but more so that there's a greater good to be served. And if you want to monetize that, then you probably say you make millions of money within a very short time. Yeah.
Thanks. Who would like to provide? Oh, please.
To the answer of Dr. George's question, just practical data. For our case, we are very lucky enough to have the support from APNIC, ISC, and UNDP. So money didn't expended from our pocket. But what we provided the logistic support, the civil infrastructure, electricity. So what we are doing, we have deployed, since it is inside the Internet Exchange, we have deployed a bare minimum monthly fee just to run the just to support the electricity bill, and two security guards and one system engineer. It's a very just data for your information. So it's a very win-win situation. We are not charging anything other than the running expense. Even our officer, they don't have any salary for that. So that's the reality.
Thank you. Other panelists, the hypothetical question.
Well, I guess that lands in my lap. If that was to happen, we would end, as you described it, certain data was removed from the root zone, the zone was propagated, some of the root server operators decide to not install that change or roll back or whatever you want to call it. We would end up in a situation where different root servers have different data. That is correct. That said, the DNS system is built to handle a certain amount of that because the DNS system is a loosely coherent system. There's no guarantee that all the root servers will always give the same answer. It's designed to handle a certain time shift and it allows for a gap there. But after a while, it will become evident that there is a difference. So the difference will start to show after a while because clients that are using the DNS information, they cache information every time they ask a named server. So they will retain a copy for a while. For how long, it varies per DNS record in the entire database. So every record has a timestamp that says, you can keep me for this long. And the important thing here is the list of name servers for a particular top-level domain. And there, the timestamp is on the order of several days. So after a number of days, you will start to see differences where some clients will be able to get to the information where others will not. But it will be a gradual change. It will not be sudden. And it will allow for all types of diplomatic communication and so on. So there will be no sudden changes. There will be no switching off, but there will be a gradual degradation. And there are a number of engineering tricks you can use as well if you want to do a local, take care of the problem locally within a certain community. But I hope we don't have to go there. I have to say that I see it as rather unlikely. I've even seen the traces of discussions going that way where sanity has prevailed. The US government isn't all evil. There are actually good people in there who do a very good job, and they have their track record so far is very good. It's much better than you can see, but it's in the non-existing changes that the track record is.
Suzanne?
Sure. As an engineer, I have to say I hate hypotheticals because they're always too vague. You're always asking, well, it depends. You know, much like a lawyer or a politician, it depends. Such a sequence of actions would put us in a position where any act we took had policy implications, and as I said earlier, we avoid that. We avoid involvement in policy. To perform a very straightforward task under pretty specific conditions. I think, again, in the short term, for reasons that my colleague has explained, there would be very limited impact to such an action. And on the longer term, I think a lot of consultation and discussion and engagement and yelling and screaming would happen before there was any change in normal behavior among the root server operators or as far as the behavior of the root servers was concerned.
Desiree?
Yeah, last comment. I agree with what Lehman has said. Also, Suzanne, and that it's very unlikely to happen, but I'll just like to draw your attention to another type of problem where what we have seen in the past is where particular national governments had decided to take off their country off the net themselves, rather disconnect. We've seen those incidents in Nepal and Myanmar and so on. So if you were a system administrator or DNS host master in a big multinational organization and you decide to point a certain entry of a domain name system to another website, what law have you broken? I don't think we have any laws in place for this. So that's just a point of reflection and further.
Thank you. Two more questions.
Three more questions? Okay. One for me. I do have a sort of a follow-on comment, if I may. Liman pointed out early on. Myself. I'm Bill Manning, and one of the things I do is operate the B root name server. So B for Bill. No, B for Bermuda. Anyway. Liman pointed out that the root server operators are in regular contact, and any such change would be noted, and we would attempt to figure it out before it got really visible. I mean, this is one of the things that we would do. So, Suzanne, my question to you, with regards to DNS security, in the absence of validation and for DNSSEC in applications, what is the value of signing the root or a TLD?
Hello. My name is David Mbili. I'm from Namibia. I have a question for the gentleman from Kenya. You said that in Africa we've got 3 countries with host servers and 15 with altogether with Internet Exchange points. Can you elaborate on the difference between the two for those who are laymen around us here?
Not a question, but a comment. Mr. Moderator, you commented that one doesn't often get an improvement in service and a reduction in cost. Actually, in the tech world, that's quite often the case. We're going to hear about another one of those examples in the next session in this room, which is Internet Exchange Points. But to answer your question, how long does a root server take to pay for itself in terms of the international bandwidth used? In the case of one of the examples that you put up, and excluding the cost of hosting and excluding the cost of the updates to it, worked out as about 10 years, 10-year payback. So you're not saving a huge amount of money. What you are doing is you're getting better performance and more particularly better reliability.
Panel?
Okay, I'll answer the question where there was to explain the difference between the countries with the root servers and the countries with the exchange points. So the best practice out there when it comes to deployment of root servers is to deploy them where there is an exchange point, because an exchange point is a central location where most of the ISPs or the service providers come and exchange traffic together. Now, there's a session on exchange points in this particular room right after this session, so you can sit on that to just get a better experience of what exchange points are. Now, having said that, so with the best practice of deployment of root servers being in exchange points, there are 3 countries, Egypt, Kenya, and South Africa, where we've already had exchange points in place, and at these same facilities is where we've deployed the root servers. Now, so that means there is an opportunity for the other remaining 12 other African countries which have exchange points to actually deploy root servers because they have functioning exchange points. It's the ideal location to actually host an exchange, a root server. Unless, of course, where you have an incumbent monopoly, that means you have only one exit point from a particular country, and so then the root server can actually be hosted within that particular telecom infrastructure. But it's probably not the ideal thing, but in such a case where, you know, some countries actually just have the incumbent telco as the only licensed entity to provide internet connectivity and telecommunications in a country. So in such a case, and where, you know, everybody seems to be happy with the arrangement, then it will be ideal then to place the root server at that particular telco. I hope that makes.
I think I see where Bill's question was going. My colleague asked a question about DNSSEC, and tell me if I'm paraphrasing wrong. The value of having signed data in the absence of widespread technology for validating it. All the availability of signed data does is allow the user, by technical means, if they want, to authenticate the root data as coming from IANA. You can use a different source for your root data if you want, but with DNSSEC, it won't be by accident or an attack on your system so that someone can misdirect you for malicious purposes. You'll know if you're using a different root.
Last question.
Hi, my name is Nishal Kovardhan. I'm from Internet Solutions in South Africa. We're fortunate enough to have three local instances of Anycast root servers. But my question's really posed to some of the other root server operators that have identified that they're in this room. Some of you don't support Anycast, and if it's such a great technology and it's proven it works so well over the years, is there any particular reason that you're not doing this, and is this forthcoming in the future?
I guess that would be me. Is there any other root name server operator in?
Is there a root server operator in the room?
Not well. Okay. Yep. But you can sit there, right? Right.
He doesn't.
The humor value here, the joke for the day. Excuse me, Desiree. F. B. So the answer to answer your question, actually, we do support Anycast, but we're not aggressive in promoting that. You have to come ask us to put an Anycast instance in place. We recognize the need or the desire to actually put authoritative source for not only the root but for TLDs in the same location. And so we're actually trying to work with a group of people to find a good solution so that when we put a DNS service appliance in, you get a large selection, not just the root. But there are other people who are much, much more agile at this and are more willing to do it. It's not that we won't do it, it's just that there are fewer people that ask us.
Okay, a housekeeping item. In this corner of the room, there are number of boxes of books, The Power of Ideas, Internet Governance. They're free, they're available, and they're for you. Now, you've been a very good audience, and you've been very patient. I hope you've learned something, and you know more than when you entered the room. I'd like to have you join me in thanking the panel for their contributions to that. Session's closed.
But do come and talk to us.
Yes, feel free.
Yes.
We are real people.
We are real people. If you have questions, wonder about stuff, just come and talk to us.